Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. And we'll be talking about the ones that started on November 7th and went to September 7th and went all the way to September 13th of 2015. And didn't get to read a hell of a lot this week because we went to the zoo on Saturday and we had other things that came up during the week. So it's going to be a smaller list, and it should go fairly fast. It won't be as long as the last one. At least this week it won't. So there's quite a bit of things to talk about, but let's start at the bottom. I'll also talk about the ratings. Number one means I hated it. Number two is I did not like it. Number three is I like it. Number four is I really like it. And number five is I love it. These are the Netflix ratings that I stole from my comic ratings. So we're going to start at the, let's do the breakdown. This month we had one comic from Boom Studios, one from Dark Horse, 13 from DC, 4 from Image, and 3 from Marvel Comics. So it's not as big of a distribution as last week, but there's still a good distribution. A lot of DC, and surprisingly a lot of older DC in this this batch of books. So we'll start at the bottom, and the lowest score this week was a 3 out of 5, and there were three books that I gave a 3 out of 5 to: Mirror's Edge, Exordium. Okay, so I bought this because I've been enjoying a lot of the Dark Horse offerings lately, and this was a number one. And sometimes I like video game properties, even though I don't play the video game. Well, Mirror's Edge is based on a video game, and I know nothing about the video game. So I jumped in on this book. It is by Christopher Emmengard and Matthias Hagstrom. And this is the second book of the series based on the video game. The first one was also published by Dark Horse, and it focuses on these characters called the Runners. And this one runner is Faith. She looks like she might be Asian American, or maybe not even American. I have no idea. And she's looks like she's infiltrated some area that has security monitors on it, and they monitored her. And they basically send some guys after her, some security agents after her. She can run away from these guards, and as she runs away from the guards, she runs into a dealing, like a crime lord dealing that's going on accidentally, and gunfire breaks out between the crime lords and these security cops that she ran into that were chasing her. And she manages to get in a fist fight with these guards and gets knocked out and brought before a crime lord. And he basically wants to hire her. But interesting enough, he has this photo or this painting on the wall. And Faith notices it. And she's like, she notices that it's her mother had painted it. And she wants it. She's like, what are you going to take for, you know, if I could buy it? And he says, it's not for sale. And she just decides to take it. So whatever she is, she's a runner, and she, you know, takes it and tries to get away, ends up breaking the picture, and then runs up with some of her mates and ends up joining this organization. Even though she didn't work for this guy, she's going to work for this guy. It was a very hard world to get into. For somebody like me that wasn't into the video game or didn't know anything, all I know is that she's a runner, kind of like Logan's Run, and she's good at doing it. And this criminal organization wants to hire her to be a runner for I don't know what, but I imagine drugs or taking stuff from point A to point B that is illegal. But we'll see how that pans out, and we might see how the relationship that this guy has with her mom, you know, how did he get this painting? I thought the art was really nice. There's a lot of running, a lot of action poses in some of the scenes, and it's done really well. I hear that in the video game, this character is all about fighting and movement. In other words, there's no guns or anything else, which makes it kind of interesting in itself. But I liked it. I didn't really like it. I just liked it, and I thought it. I'm kind of on the. I don't know if I'm going to get issue two. If I had pre-ordered it, I think I'm going to stick with it. But if I didn't, I might not get it because I am not sure this is for me. But if you're into the video game Mirror's Edge, you might enjoy this a lot more than I did. Next up is this book dropped for me, and for no other reason than there's something this artist does, and I think he does it because the writer tells him to. But we got Steve Orlando and Aiko on art for Midnighter number 3. I have been loving this series. I've really been enjoying the character in Grayson, and this book has been really good, but the artistic style that goes along with the book, I find so distracting for me to get into the book. He tends to, and I don't know if this is the writer telling the artist what to do, but there's these tiny fucking boxes. They're so tiny, and I'm old. I'm over 45, so these boxes I find totally annoying. And there's like on the first pages 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 boxes plus 4 panels, and those are little tiny boxes. And I think what they're trying to do is let you see how the Midnighter can process information really fast by noticing things, because he can tell your like vulnerabilities and stuff, and he can fight you based on your movements. He can predict what you're going to do. And he's got super strength. And I think that's what they're trying to do. And the other thing that I think the series did in this particular issue to lose me a little bit is it kept going forward, backward. And I really wished it would have stayed in the here and now. I kind of like the linear storytelling. I like when they go forward, backward, maybe once or twice, but when it's like all over the book, it's hard to follow a thread because you just keep switching. And I find sometimes I really enjoy it, and in this particular case, I didn't enjoy it. So I got distracted. The story itself is really solid. They stole the technology that gives the Midnighter his abilities in previous issues, and he's trying to track down that person. And in the meantime, this woman had her daughter stolen, and Midnighter tells this lady, Miss Riley, that he's going to recover her. And he finds that her daughter has been hooked up to that technology that the gardener had, and he is able to free her. And so the story itself was really good. There's a little more on his relationship. You know, they spent a good 4 or 5 pages with his new lover. And then at the very, very end, it ties into Grayson. So I imagine in the next issue, we're going to get more Grayson. I have been rating this like 4 out of 5, and maybe even I gave it a 5 out of 5 prior. So it's been all over the place. But I noticed when they put all these boxes in, it just distracts me so much. It takes me out. Some people that are younger and have younger eyes might look at those and say, that's really inventive. That's a really cool way for me to see the information that the Midnighter's processing in a sequential artwork form. So if I didn't like it, that doesn't mean that you won't. You might look at those boxes and say, I really, really like what they're doing. So it's just a personal thing with me, because it distracts from the flow of the story. and I start focusing on the box, and then I forget what I'm looking at, and it confuses me. Yeah, I'm getting old. So that was a 3 out of 5, which means I liked it. There was aspects of it that I really, really liked, but there was things that took it down a notch, because basically the jumping back and forth and the boxes dropped it to a 3 out of 5 for me. The other 3 out of 5, which I'll talk about later, is a Joshua Dysart book I didn't own. I purchased on eBay last week. Somebody had mentioned, you know, Joshua Dysart. I love Joshua Dysart, you know, what he does with Harbinger and Imperium. And my favorite comic almost of all time, as far as the whole series, is Unknown Soldier. I just think it's phenomenal. And then he's done things like Corn Boy, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. So I said, man, I should try some of his early work, you know, Violent Messiahs. And there's even been some interesting conversation back and forth on my Facebook page, as I learned that issue number 2 actually was an image of Joshua Dysart, you know, using photo reference. And I thought that was pretty cool. But number 1 introduces Citizen Payne, introduces you to the town, and introduces you to the main female cop, who's not very liked by the entire precinct, but she does get the job done. Her whole job is to try to bring in Citizen Payne. And it does a good job of introduction, but the book got better. Okay, so I rated number 1 a 3 out of 5, and I'll talk about the details as I get into the 4 out of 5s, because I rated number 2 a 4 out of 5. So number... going into the 4 out of... so I had 3 books in the 3 out of 5, and now we're going into the 4 out of 5s. And we had Batmite number 4. This book is just... it's been a solid 4 out of 5 for me. It's just... the humor in it is not laugh out loud funny, but it's kind of like a you know, chuckle here and a chuckle there. The characterization is awesome. I really like the... roommates that Batmite chooses to stay with. One of them reminds me of Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. They even make a reference to Shaggy. And the other females kind of allowing it. But Batmite's pretty much destroying their apartment. And he even is trying to cook something and starts a big old fire and burns a photo album of the females. And she was devastated because that photo album had everything in everything for it. And interesting enough, Skeets comes into the apartment, and they needed Batmite to track down Gridlock, which is a villain that they're after. So Booster Gold is in this. And if you know Booster Gold, it was created by Dan Jurgens. Well, Dan Jurgens is writing this, so it's really cool because he knows the character inside and out. Corin Holwell does a fantastic job of drawing humor, and... it looks like something that could be animated and have a really cool presentation. But I really enjoy this series. It's a limited series. I think there's only 2 more issues left. But he's exploring a bunch of different characters, very much so like the all-new all-star Section 6 or Section 8, which is the other book, which book to book they go to a different hero. Like, one had Batman, one had Martian Manhunter, and this new one that just came out has Wonder Woman. Well, this one takes us, this Batmite takes us into a battle with Gridlock, and it makes fun of a lot of stuff, has a lot of pop culture references, and I really enjoy it. I think it's a fun read. It's one of those things that you could read before bed and just go to bed feeling good. So Batmite, 4 out of 5. And I look forward to the next issue. See what happens there. The other one is another humor book. And it's a character that I used to despise. Until recently, I'm starting to like him a little bit. And I think it's because of this Dugan guy. Or Duggan, if that... Jerry Duggan. and the artist is Salva Espin. But this series, I was buying the bundle, the DCBS bundle, and it's a Marvel bundle, so you get everything Secret Wars. And this features Deadpool's wife as she teams up with the Howling Commandos, which is a lot of Bronze Age monsters. You got Werewolf by Night. You have Frankenstein's monster. You have the Living Mummy. You have a Venom symbiote. And you have Man-Thing. And she's basically going to try to find some artifacts to defeat Dracula and hopefully bring Deadpool back to life. And the monsters were originally working with Dracula, but they kind of betrayed Dracula. And they have the Invisible Man spying on Dracula, and Dracula thought the Invisible Man was dead. And it kind of pokes fun of Invisible Woman, so you don't know if in this world, if that's really Sue Storm. I have no idea. But the main reason I like this series is because there is humor, and it's usually when Deadpool is he's telling you the story. And then the other part that I really enjoy is these monsters, these Bronze Age monsters. They mean a lot to me. Like, I think I own every Living Mummy, Frankenstein's monster title. I'm working on Werewolf by Night. I have his first appearance, and I'm working on a few more. I think I have like under 10 books to go. I still don't have a lot of Man-Thing, but I enjoy the Marvel monsters, and this is that. And there's going to be something with them following Secret Wars, so I'll be happy to follow that. But it is a surprise to me. I thought this would be a 3 out of 5, but it's been a constant 4 out of 5 for me. And it is humorous. The next one comes from Boom Studios. It's The Fiction by Kurt Pyrus and David Rubin. And this story has been pretty cool. It's about four childhood friends that are able to open this book and enter imaginary worlds, and they keep it a secret between them until one day when they're children, one of the kids goes vanishing and vanishes when he goes into the book again, and they're not ever able to find him. So they essentially put the book away and just say, we can't go back there because we might get lost in this world as well. They don't know where he is or what's going on. You know, the police question them as to what might have happened to the boy, but they don't tell them, that they keep it a secret. They tell everybody that they must keep it a secret. For one thing, people will think they're crazy and not believe them, and then they'd be suspects. So they leave it quiet for many, many, many years until they're adults, and then another friend goes into the book accidentally. And he's gone, and his wife basically asks for help. And the other two friends go back into this imaginary world. And that's what The Fiction is about. And this is issue 2, which I described a lot about. But it is really interesting. The art really goes good with the story. And one of the characters finds out that one of the people inside of this world is somebody that he knew very, very, very well. So we'll see where that goes. I think issue 3 is already out. I just haven't read it yet. And then it leads us into an Image book, Faster Than Light number 1, by Haberlin, Brian Haberlin. He did the story and the art, and it's created by Haberlin and another person called Skip Brittenham. And what makes this, well, there's install a free app, point your device at the comic and watch it come to life in interactive 3D. I didn't even see this page. I think I want to try it. That might change the way I I rate this. But this book is really cool. It's a slow burn, and it's a lot of just dialogue, but it sets up the scientist that invents the technology for us as a people to travel at light speed, and it sets up the first group that is getting ready to travel at light speed, and it also sets up a reason why we have to travel at light speed, and it does a good job of building your curiosity as the book goes on. It's just really slow, and if you're patient, I think it's going to really pay off. So that's Faster Than Light. I gave it a 4 out of 5. And as I go to the top, it's like things I like more. And then we got to Violent Messiahs, number 2 by Dysart and Tone Rodriguez. And this series, I think this is the second volume from Image. The first volume was printed by Hurricane Comics. And I don't know if Dysart actually published that under Image, or if those 3 issues are totally new story that build up Citizen Pain, and then this takes off from it at Image. But this issue focuses on that one detective. She's a female detective who's not well liked, but she gets the job done, and she thinks she's found out where a complex where Citizen Pain might be. And as she gets there, they raid it. They raid the building, and they're ready to capture him. And they find a bunch of kids in there. And faces of shock as they find out their parents have been murdered. And they run into a different detective. And this detective says, "I think you invaded my crime scene because I've been tracking the family man." And the family man is an interesting villain that he's tracking because he's a vigilante that kills parents and leaves the kids alone, but he only kills bad parents, like parents that deal in drugs or neglect or child abuse or put their kids up or abuse their kids sexually. He'll actually kill them and leave the kids alive, and he writes stuff on the wall as his MO. And Citizen Payne decides to visit that detective. I don't know what the relationship they're establishing between the female detective and Citizen Payne, but Citizen Payne has a father. And Citizen Payne's like a vigilante. He stops crime, but he doesn't do it without taking life. Like, he'll do what has to get done. He's not like Batman. He's more like the Punisher. So, it does a good job of that and establishing that these two detectives are going to work together to try to have similar goals. And then Citizen Payne pays the detective a visit at the very, very end. So we'll see where that goes. But it's a really cool book, and it's 8 issues. So there's Volume 1, it's 3 issues from Hurricane Comics. Volume 2 is 8 issues, and Volume 3 is 4 issues. It's a 4-issue miniseries. And I have Volume 2 and Volume 3, but not Volume 1. So it's really cool. And then we get into the Thunder Agents, which has had many incarnations. Tower Comics, you know, they started in the 60s, and they were a pretty viable property. Let me see how many volumes we have of Thunder Agents. We got 5 volumes. So Thunder Agents, the first one, which I own issue 1 in very good condition and issue 2 in fine condition. So I have the first appearance of Dynamo, Iron Maiden, Menthor, No Man, you know, most of the major Thunder Agents. First appearance of Lightning is in number 2, and Lightning and Dynamo play a big part in the Thunder Agents number 1 from DC Comics. This happened in 2011. It ran from 2010 to 2011, and it was right before the end, or before Flashpoint. And it ran 10 issues, and it has 1 volume trade that collects 1 through 10. Well, I read number 1 and 2. And it introduces two characters who are... They seem like they have alternative motives. It reminds me a lot of Hardcore. If you're familiar with Bloodshot and the Hardcore, or them, they put chips in their heads, which gives them powers, and then they're manipulated. And that's what these Thunder Agents seem like they're going to be. It opens up showing the first incarnation of Thunder Agents. Like it seems like there's like Thunder Agents all the time, and they always have the same powers. Like they pick like five people and they grant them powers, and then those five people die, and then they take another group of five people, and the people that they target are people that would match up with those abilities pretty well. Like physically, if a guy's a great runner, he might be Lightning, or if he's super strong, he might, you know, be Dynamo. It matches them up pretty well, but it seems like this organization, which is a male and a female, they do awful stuff to manipulate them. Like one of these guys was like a track star, an Olympic level athlete. He was making a lot of money off of runs and long distance runs from Kenya, and it went into his backstory, and then it said that he had been doing steroids, and he didn't do any steroids, but they manipulated the media, they manipulated everything, so they took away all his medals, his family life was destroyed, and now they make it look like, hey, why don't you come work for us? You'll be able to run again. But they fucked it up for him in the first place, which really sucks. So, I really enjoy this Thunder Agents, and it leads into another mini after this. So you have Thunder Agents Volume 1, which is Tower Comics. Volume 2, which is just two issues from JC Comics. I own number one of those, too. We have the third series, which is DC Comics. The fourth series, which is DC Comics, which was six issues. And the fifth series, which is IDW. And they also have Thunder Agents, like Wally Wood's Thunder Agents, which came out from Deluxe from 1984 to 1986. So there's a lot of Thunder Agents books that you could enjoy. There's also DC put together archives for them, and IDW is printing out all of them in trade. I am buying all their old stuff in trade from IDW, so it's a really cool property. The other one that was a 4 out of 5 for me was Aquaman number 43 by Cullen Bunn and Trevor McCarthy and Jesus Marino. Yeah, there was The thing that I'm not enjoying is it doesn't seem like Trevor McCarthy is able to do a monthly book. But I know he could because he did Clarion the Witch Boy and absolutely loved it. But McCarthy's art seems to be like 8 pages every book now. And then there's another artist that fills in. And I have to say, I like Trevor McCarthy's artwork. But I have to say that Jesus Marino overshadowed him in this book. He drew really good stuff. So this takes place where Garth and Killer Shark and a few other of Aquaman's villains, mostly monster-type villains, head after Aquaman to bring him back to Atlantis for Mera. And they run into a beast, and it's like a techno-beast that they have to fight. And Aquaman's like, let's put our differences aside and fight this guy, which they have to do if they're going to have any chance of succeeding. There's several flashbacks letting you know about Thol, which is the world that he's trying to reunite with Atlantis. And you find out that why he's reuniting them is because they used to be part of Atlantis. And now they're just got monsters and stuff coming out of it. But he has that team up, and some of the art is really crisp, which is Moreno's art, and then some is really, like, there's some panel by Trevor McCarthy that looks really good, like when he draws the monsters and stuff, but there's other panels that look like, man, they don't look very good. But there is a surprise ending at the end of this one. You might be asking, you know, why is Mara acting the way she is? Well, you actually find out, and I don't want to spoil it, but that was really cool. Cool ending. Batman Beyond also has a surprise ending. This is Dan Jurgens and Chang on art. And this takes off from New 52 Futures End. Tim Drake in the future is now Batman Beyond, and he's also in Teen Titans right now. So he had to take the mantle from Terry after that series was over, and people are treating him like, well, they want Terry back, but he's actually doing his best. But because he's done certain things, he's exposed Gotham to Brother Eye. And now Brother Eye can infiltrate Gotham. Before last issue, Brother Eye could not infiltrate Gotham. But now he can. And he was able to do it through the technology that Batman Beyond was using. And now Alfred, which is a computer for Tim, is infiltrated as well, so he has to shut down and he can't use it anymore. But it is a really cool series as the OMACs and stuff start to take over all the characters in Gotham, and Tim is teaming up with Barbara Gordon, and they go to the Batcave, and it reveals he can't use his current suit or any other suits, so he has to use version 1.0, and that version 1.0 currently leaks up with what else is going on in DC right now, if you're following Batman. So that was really cool. And then I read another old book. It was JLA Classified. Great creative team, Gail Simone and Garcia Lopez on art, Klaus Janson on inks. This was part two of a series that focused on this villain that's trying to take out the Justice League and also control a lot of other pieces of Earth that have leaders that are kind of, let's say, questionable, like Santa Prescha and a couple other places like that. And he is using a virus that came from Starro to infect whole cities, and also he infects the Justice League. They infect the Flash. And what I really liked about this issue is you get some really good Wonder Woman moments, because they're convincing the United Nations that, hey, we don't have the disease. We have one member that is infected, and he's under quarantine. But meanwhile, the UN is working with the president, and they want to blow the satellite out of the sky because they're worried that the virus will spread. There are some military members that are trying to infiltrate General Devore Tzik, and that doesn't work out so well. They're actually captured at the end. But what's really cool here is that while everybody else goes to try to help Santa Prescha wouldn't pay the bill to this general, so he basically took it out. So Martian Manhunter, Superman, and John Stewart Green Lantern, they actually go down to try to help people on Santa Prescha and find almost all life just dead. Martian Manhunter realizes that he has to go like deep in the water past a certain depth before he sees there's live fish again. But Wonder Woman says, I'll stay behind. And you know why she volunteers to stay behind? Because if Flash loses it, she's the only one, and she knows that she could get the job done and kill Flash, which is kind of crazy. Well, Flash's virus really gets infected, and he breaks loose. He was in like a containment thing that was John Stewart put around him, and he breaks loose, starts running at super speed, attacks Wonder Woman, hitting her at super speed, but he's infected by this Starro thing. And what Wonder Woman notices is that each point of the star, he's attacking like in 5 points. It's like blam, 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 blam. And she recognizes the pattern. She says, if I time this right, I'm going to throw this punch right about now. Wham! Smacks Flash, knocks the shit out of him. But I can't wait to read the next issue to see what happens. You know, this was from 2006, and I had not read this issue, so it's really cool. I can't wait to read number 18. So what else do we got? So we went over Classified. We also have the Korvac Saga from Marvel Comics. This one I've been loving the hell out of. And I can't necessarily explain 100% why. It's just one of those battle worlds that I find really cool. It's like Korvac has the Guardians of the Galaxy policing his area, and what happens is there's a virus in his area, very much like the Justice League virus, except it contaminates people, and Korvac's the president there, and these people just start start shouting like, the stars are bright, or you know, stuff about the stars, and then they turn into these huge monsters, and they essentially burn out, and they have to take out. Well, Korvac just lost his wife because she turned into a monster, and he's pretty devastated. And up to this point, he's shown no power. He has the Guardians do everything. And one of the Guardians actually ends up dying as he's working with Moondragon. It's Starhawk. He ends up burning out. And Korvac has never used powers in this title before this one. This is number 3. And he's able to bring Starhawk back to life. And if you know Korvac, he almost is like a god. Like, he has infinite power. So, and he's always been quarreling with Simon, Wonder Man. And the two teams, so you have like an Avengers team that's fighting with the Guardians of the Galaxy because they're trying to keep Doom away or keep under his guard, but Williams wants to take over Korvac's area, and Korvac just wants to sustain his area. So they've been at odds, but it's been a really good suspenseful title, and this is by Abnett, and Schmidt is on art. Schmidt's art took me a while to get used to, but after number 1 and 2, it's just grown on me. I really starting to enjoy it. That was a 4 out of 5. And now we get into the 5 out of 5. So I have never, you're going to find this hard to believe, but I've never read Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Strikes Again. This is the second volume. And it doesn't have a lot of good buzz. I think a few people like it, like Vince B from 11 O'Clock Comics. He's probably the only one I've ever heard that has enjoyed it, on a podcast anyway. But I found I absolutely love this book. It is so cool. Like, there was many scenes in there like where I thought this character was like fighting like Cthulhu-like monsters. I thought it was going to be Aquaman. And after I read it all, I found out it was Ray Palmer, and they had him trapped in a Petri dish. And Carrie Kelly, who's now Catwoman, goes to rescue him and actually swallows him so she can get him out of there and bring him back to the Batcave and team up with Batman. And it's really cool because Superman has his faction and Batman has his team. Like, you have Ray Palmer and Green Arrow, and Superman has Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel on his side. Captain Marvel looks like really old, and Batman has these characters that go with Catwoman from place to place. Catwoman's really young. Carrie Kelly's, you know, in her teens, but she seems to be trained well enough by Batman to get the job done. And Superman has to stop this huge asteroid, and there's nude news. Like, there's a reporter that does the news in nude, and that's how you learn about like what's happening on in this world politically. I thought it was hilarious. And Jimmy Olsen is constantly debating with the president, and the president's issued quarantines. Like you got to be in it, and they keep getting smaller and smaller. Like you got to be in your house by 8 o'clock, and then it's like 7 o'clock, and but the electricity is free, and you find out the electricity is free because they have the Flash powering everything. And Batman knows about it and sends Carrie Kelly to rescue the Flash, which is Barry Allen. It's so awesome. But, yeah, I found it to be highly entertaining. This was book one by Frank Miller. And I wanted to get ready for the Master Race, which is coming. It's just been solicited in this month's previews. And this takes place right before it, so... Yeah, Frank Miller will not be writing the Master Race. He has plotted it, but Azzarello is going to be writing it. And I've heard that that's the case because Frank Miller's health has been pretty bad. But I haven't heard much about his health or what's going on with him other than see pictures of him where he doesn't look very healthy. So... we'll see where that goes. But I found it to be highly entertaining. And Superman ends up infiltrating the Batcave, and Batman puts on some kryptonite gloves and starts beating the shit out of him. But also has the Flash and Green Arrow help him out. Like, Flash goes and puts all these, like, bombs on him and hits him in a whole bunch of different places. And it was really cool. And then... seems like Wonder Woman has a relationship with Superman, and it was a good issue. So I rated that a 5 out of 5 just because I had so much fun with it, and I loved it. I loved every page turn because I didn't know what I was going to get. Surprisingly, has never been spoiled for me, so it was fun. And the next issue, this is my second 5 out of 5. No, third 5 out of 5, I believe, for this title. But it's Brian Wood's Starve. And the artist is Danijel Zezelj. That's a weird name with Dave Sturt colors. But his art is phenomenal. And this is a post-apocalyptic cooking show. Like, the world has ended and the world has gone to pot. But what is popular is like the Food Network, and this cook is really popular, and they brought him back to this show. He doesn't really want to do it, but he's going to do it. And their whole job is the wife is working with somebody else to try to take him down. And this actually brings his daughter into the picture. And in this one, they had to actually slaughter a pig on live TV and then choose like three dishes that they had to all present. And I really enjoyed this book. It's such a weird premise, but it's a page turner, and I absolutely love it. Highly recommend it, especially if you like watching the Food Network and if you like post-apocalyptic books. I would get into it. And I think this might be, I don't know if it's been a while, but my last 5 out of 5 was a Marvel comic, which I absolutely loved. And I loved the first one, too. But the second one was even better. It was 1872. It's a Secret Wars title. And it's basically, if you took the Marvel Universe and put them in a Western, what would these characters be like? Like, Howard Stark is in there. Steve Rogers is the sheriff. And the main premise is... at least what kicks us off into this series is that Red Wolf has actually been blowing up dams, and he's causing impacts to the Kingpin. And the Kingpin sends out many of his mercenaries to go bring this guy in and hang him. But he doesn't want to give him in front of a court. He doesn't want to show him justice. Like, Foggy Nelson is one of the judges, and Kingpin is trying to corrupt him, and Steve is protecting him. He wants him to go to court, have a just trial, because he knows why that dam needed to blow up. It was to save his people. And Kingpin sends out these people after Steve Rogers, and it really has a surprise ending because we lose a major, major character, and it surprised the hell out of me. But this book is like really good. It's Jerry Duggan, who we just talked about with the Deadpool, and he's doing a very serious book, and I really, really enjoy it. And Nick Varela does really good art. Like, it's like a Gotham Central type art style, but it's a lot lighter on the colors because it's in the West. But highly recommend it. So that was number one. So we had at the number one, we had one DC, one Image, and one Marvel, all in the top five, you know, five out of five. And I really, really, really enjoyed the hell out of it. And, the one I forgot. Shit. Right after Korvac Saga, the highest 4 out of 5 was The War That Time Forgot. I read issues 8 through 12. This was a Bruce Jones series, which was phenomenal. I forgot to do that right before Dark Knight Strikes Again. But it features, like, really obscure war DC characters like Red Hair, the Golden Gladiator, Viking Prince, G.I. Robot, Enemy Ace, Lieutenant Carson, who's really obscure. I had to actually look him up to see if he appeared. And he appears, he was part of the original Suicide Squad. So he's kind of like the main character. And then there's this futuristic woman called Akisha. But what this it turns out to be a really cool series where all these war people are put on this Earth, kind of like a mosaic at Earth, and they don't all get along, and they form groups like certain people. Oh, Tomahawk is also in this, DC's Tomahawk, and they form groups, and they end up fighting each other, and there's a lot of infighting while these aliens are watching. Well, Akisha is working for these aliens, and you don't really know what their objective is, but these aliens put them on a world with the theory that if they put these war people or these war heroes that would win wars and take over places and all in one spot and took them out of history, that these wars wouldn't devastate the Earth. So they're actually trying to save the Earth, these aliens, in such a weird way. And they have this character Jarhead and his wife Trang, and she's pregnant, and oh man, there's dinosaurs everywhere. You have really cool artists like Graham Nolan and Scott Collins, and the main guy, I can't even think of his name right now. Let me see if I could find his name on one of these books. Barry Nuevo. He was a artist around this time at DC, around 2009, I believe. And he does a hell of a job, too. So you get some really solid artists with Bruce Jones writing, and Bruce Jones gets a lot of shit, but man, I enjoyed the shit out of his Hulk. And even though his Warlord was shot down, after reading it, I really wanted to see where he was going with it. And he did some Checkmate, which has some pretty bad reviews, but that I haven't read yet. But this is a fantastic series. I highly recommend it. My co-host on Retrocast was able to pick them up, all of them, for a quarter at his local shop. So hopefully he'll enjoy it half as much as I've enjoyed it, and he already has his money's worth. So that's all I have. Those were the top books for this week, and going from bottom to top. And I hope you enjoyed it. Again, you can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com or on Twitter's Mike Myers Brunch. And on the Facebook pages, it would be under Geek Brunch Podcast. and you can click the like button and follow everything there. The website is geekbrunchpodcast.com. And let me know what you think, and we'll see what happens in the next year, the next week. I tend to read whatever I feel like reading, you know, for the week. So who knows? It might be old stuff. It might be new stuff. It might be all one company. It might be a mishmat, you know, a whole bunch of different companies. I don't know. I tend to read what I feel like reading, so I never even know what it'll be. I don't plan any of this. I don't write any notes. I just kind of go off the spur. If anything, I'll look up something on my database, which I use, Comic Base, which I think is wonderful. But thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.